Good afternoon. The House Judiciary Committee is in session, in attendance. My friend Representative Gruenberg, my friend Representative Lynn, my boss, Representative Coghill, myself, Representative Ramirez, Vice Chair Dahlstrom, Representative Holmes, my new friend, and Rep. Samuels is otherwise tied up, but may be here later. I am the least punctual person in the world, which is bad. But when we get busier, we've got to start promptly at 1 p.m. When we start to get a full bill, because judiciary often could go till 4:30, 5 p.m. Sometimes it gets bogged down. And I have a bill up at 1:30 in House Finance, so I will be relinquishing the gavel happily to the vice chair at that point. Representative Seaton, we would love to have House Bill 25 up because Representative Lynn is stuck here whether he likes to be or not. So we'll just make you go a second.
I like it. How about that sucking up to the chair?
Yeah. I feel better sucking up to you, Representative Lynn. Representative Seaton, nice to see you. Thank you very much for this memorandum. Has everybody received it and had an opportunity to peruse it?
Yes.
Representative Seaton, remarks? Got your hat, your glasses, you're good to go.
Hopefully the memorandum covers the questions that we had the other day, goes through what it takes for a notice, and also that Ledge Legal thinks that this would be outside the scope of the bill. We're trying to reform trespass, as well as the it occurs in several different sections, so it would be complicate the bills fairly. So I'd appreciate it if the committee wishes to reform trespass, that they do it in another vehicle.
They don't trespass on your bill.
I wanted to ask a question, Representative Seaton. It seems to me that, and I asked Katie this in the hallway earlier, it seems to me that, but that's the whole idea of not having trespass signs up, is to better allow people to use wide open space, to give people broader access to land that might not otherwise. I'm reluctant to walk across a piece of property that says no trespassing. And is that accurate?
Oh, that's correct. The whole purpose of this bill is to give landowners more security and a basic understanding that if they do allow free public access for recreational purposes, that they won't be sued for negligence. And so this is a method of encouraging that dialogue within communities, as well as as eliminating prescriptive easement or adverse possession, so that someone doesn't have to worry about that as well. So that's the entire intent of it.
Because if I can follow up, I think I fit this bill. Pike's Landing has a public boat launch that we don't charge for, and people use it all hours of the day. I mean, hours and hours before we open in the morning, especially during moose hunting season. We'll have people that'll go out at 5-6 o'clock in the morning, launch a boat, and store it without seeking permission. And there are no trespassing signs up, and they're encouraged to use it. And I would be bummed if I got sued for providing free access for recreational purposes. So I think I'm somebody that would benefit personally. And so for that reason, I'm going to ask the committee to excuse me.
Jack.
I think that is that an example of who this bill would be designed to help protect?
It is, Mr. Chairman. Currently in the law, as you see in the memo, if you have unimproved land, you are protected to this same status, and that is that simple negligence does not apply if you have unimproved land. But it becomes very questionable of what is improved land and what is unimproved land, and has been determined several ways in different court cases. So this extends to the situation you're
talking about. Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Seaton, for bringing this forward. This was, we greatly appreciate it. My office was actually just picking up the phone to call Ledge Legal to ask a couple of these questions when the memo arrived, so it was very, very much appreciated and timely. I have a question on a slightly different aspect. I was wondering if you could just go over with us again. I know we talked briefly about it yesterday. In line 9 on page 1, it says a landowner that directly or indirectly allows. I just want to get my head a little bit more around what it means to indirect. I assume direct is you actually say, okay, yeah, sure, come on to my land. But what exactly it means to indirectly allow?
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, this was one of the, when we first did the bill, one of the first things that was in there was oral or written permission. And that was really too restrictive for the situations that occur across Alaska. And so this is what Ledge Legal came up with as the way to get to the problem of saying, if you are not preventing someone from using the land, if you're not posting it, if you're not doing a no trespassing, then, you know, our understanding is that that would be in the indirect allowing of someone to use the land. The trespass statutes all come down to not only that it's marked, but you're also then told to get off the land. And so there's quite a difference between not only having something marked, but then being told by someone in authority that you're to remove yourself from the property. So that's the, there's quite a distinction, but this is what Ledge Legal came up with as a way to get at the hiking trails, the ski trails, and all those things where there isn't someone there to give you oral or written permission. And the oral or written permission was just too narrowly focused and wouldn't cover many of the circumstances where people are recreating in private land in Alaska.
Well,
Representative Holt?
Thank you. So, and I'm just, and I know we sort of went over this, so I'm going to try to just do this pretty quickly, but I'm still just trying to get my sense, Representative Samuels is not with us today, going back to his example where there are one or two haphazard no trespassing signs up on the land, clearly not enough to actually fit the statute of trespass, but, you know, I'm trying to get an idea of just how broad this category is of where, and I'm not going to go, I'm going to follow you and not go into revising the trespass statutes. I'm just trying to figure out how, where the line would be drawn as to where somebody's indirectly allowing. I would assume if you put a couple of no trespass signs up, even if it's not enough to legally be trespassing on the property, it probably wouldn't fall under this because you couldn't really be indirectly allowing if you actually were taking steps to keep people off your land.
And Mr. Chairman, or Representative Holmes, through the chairman. I'm not the judge, and so we get into specifics of case law, and that's one of the things that judges are supposed to do: look at the facts of the case. And so I don't think that I can tell you on this broad scale of, you know, where a judge in a particular case would say, well, there weren't enough signs. It was or wasn't. I can tell you what the intent of the law is, and then a judge on a specific finding of facts and case would have to make that determination.
So in other words, if your intent is to allow or you just don't care and you don't really take any steps, you're covered, and anybody else is kind of, that's not covered by the intent, and so that's a separate issue.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Representative Coghill?
Was there some thought, Mr. Seaton, thank you, Mr. Chairman, about the fact that I understand this is narrowly talking about injury or tort liability, but was there any thought given to the fact that if somebody now doesn't make a strict prohibition, or is it the case that if somebody doesn't make a strict prohibition, that it's they are now saying statutorily that they're indirectly able to use that land without any notification? See, that's
Representative Coghill, through the chair. There's nothing in here that addresses that. All this does is address what the duty of care of a landowner is. But there's nothing in here that says that anyone can use anybody else's land. This doesn't change any statutes in those regards at all. It just says an owner of land, if they are providing free recreational use, doesn't have a duty to do certain things. And this is covered, I think, in your backup. You see that many, many other states have gone the same way and said, you don't have the duty of care to make sure that every single little thing is taken care of on the land. You can't have gross negligence or intentional misconduct, but this is what many states have done. But there's nothing in here that is saying that anyone has a right to use your land. It just says that if someone is using your land with your indirect or your direct permission, then your duty is not to go out and, you know, shepherd them around and make sure that they don't get hurt. You can't have gross negligence things there that they're going to get hurt on, but on simple negligence, it's their responsibility.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. I wanted that on the record because my thinking is once you put this kind of language in statute, then it becomes a barrier. As long as we can, I think, make sure that that intent is as you stated.
If I could interrupt you for a moment, and we'll get to you. Would you ladies like to introduce yourselves and come up to sit in the front row? You're really more than welcome. Is this part of your
this
group?
This is part of the middle school from Northville.
Hi, guys. Here they come. Why don't you guys come sit up in the front row? You'll be able to hear a lot better. And when you got to go, you got to go. That's the way it works for me.
In my age also.
So which one of you can introduce all the rest of you guys to the House Judiciary Chair? What's your name?
I'm Madison.
Oh, you got to come up here to the microphone and introduce yourself and say who you are, where you live, right to the microphone. Rep Seaton, can you help this young lady right here?
She needs a microphone.
Oh. Get your name and your address for the record. You got to face the committee. You got to get on it. You got to get with the program.
I'm Madison Matthews. I live in North Pole, Alaska, and I'm with the Juneau, Alaska Coastal.
Who are all of your classmates here, please?
This is Kelly Scott, Brittany Donker, Jacob, and the rest of the kids aren't my classmates. They're for the other school.
Okay, come on up. You have to hurry because we got to get back to work.
I'm Delilah Erickson, and I'm from Hoonah, Alaska, and the blonde right there is Aisha Erickson, and then the girl, Aisha Geesey, and then right there is Janelle Byers, and we're for Junior Alaska Close-Up, too, except we're from Hoonah.
Excellent. Nice to
and
see you.
There's more people, but they're still coming.
Okay. And you guys, you know what? I was in close-up, and now I'm a legislator. I came to Juneau for the close-up program during Jay Hammond's administration, actually.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. It's a true story. I got the picture right in my little office, actually. Anyway, you're very welcome. Representative Seaton, please continue.
Or was I?
I think that
oh, it was
gets us to...
Representative Gruenberg, you had a point?
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I'm not aware of the term directly or indirectly being used in any area of the law. And Mrs. Carpinetti, how quickly they escape.
She was running out.
I'm only aware of indirect and direct being used in one area of the law, and that is immunity. Or contempt, indirect and direct, that's used in the term, it's a term of art in the law. And I'm not aware of it being used in this area at all, and I'm concerned if we use that particular phrase, even lawyers and judges won't know what you mean. And I would recommend we use something instead that I think would be more easily understood, and something, for example, like a landowner that explicitly or implicitly allows a recreational activity. Explicitly means that they clearly and explicitly say that, and implicitly means that they give, they don't put up an objection, and they give a silent okay to allowing the use. But unless Representative Seaton has precedent for using that particular term, I think we should change it to something, and I would recommend something like explicitly or implicitly. Maybe there's a better phrase, but I think that would be pretty clearly understood.
Well, Representative Gruenberg, and through the chair, I'm not sure that explicit or implicit almost implies, even implicitly allows, I think implies a much more tangible contact than indirectly allowing. But that'll be up to the Judiciary Committee to decide. But I think that if you implicitly allow something, it's almost like you have made a determination, and that's considered within that. But those are legal terms for you folks, so I let the Judiciary Committee figure
it out. Thank you. Representative Holmes?
Mr. Chairman, question of intent, trying to come up with something that might be an easy solution to this. If we said something along the lines of a landowner that does not prohibit recreational activity, which would include just somebody who, the landowner doesn't even know. They didn't say yes, they didn't say no. They're completely unaware that there's somebody skiing across their land. But they haven't put up all sorts of signs and made efforts to stop them. Would that be something that would be a solution?
Representative Holmes, through the chair, I think it changes the dynamics of the bill from encouraging people to allow to saying, oh, anyone that doesn't go out and post no trespassing signs. It gets to Representative Coghill's point of we're not wanting to say that somebody has a right to use your land if you don't prohibit them. We're just saying that if you do give them either directly or indirectly, allow them to use that, then you eliminate that simple negligence standard. So, the Judiciary Committee can hassle that out. I just think that the direction of the bill is that what we're trying to do is make this for people such as Representative Ramirez, that said he allows people to use his boat ramp. And that's a different thing than saying anybody can use his boat ramp that he doesn't come out and prohibit. So my advice would be no, but it's the bills before the committee.
Dr. Dahlstrom? Oh, come back. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seaton, if I remember and heard you correctly, just a few minutes ago you told us that those words directly or indirectly were added and changed at the advice of legal and different from the bill last year, so that they served the purposes and the intent, that you wanted. And so my understanding is that if we change to either one of the suggestions that have been offered, it will change the intent of the bill. And apparently Ledge Legal thought these were the appropriate words for it. So I'm supportive of what you have in the bill right now.
Representative Cockup?
And that was the point of trying to get it on record, because if ever it does go to court, one of the things that they do try to do, if they have to wander into it, is find out what was the intention. And if we're going to put a strict prohibition that if somebody prohibits and give this liability, I am fearful that then we say all comers on my property unless I strictly prohibit it. And I don't know that we want to start down that road. However, if you've allowed certain accesses on your land, for example, there are some people that allow people to ski or across a corner of their property, they may want to change the route. There's no inherent right to that route. but if they want to change it, I would hate to think that somebody felt that they had a right to that piece of property just because you allowed certain things. So I am concerned about that.
Holmes and then Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I completely agree with you, Representative Coghill. I do not think it's the intent, and nor am I trying in any way, shape, or form to give people permission to go on other people's lands when they haven't been given permission. I would contend, and if in the end of the day it's direct and indirect, that we'll go with that. But I do want to be clear that regardless of whether we turn this into, you know, people who don't prohibit, it still would not allow people. It is not my intent by any language to allow people to go onto other people's lands without permission. It would simply, the only thing in my view it would do is if somebody happens to ski across your land and you didn't even know they were there to give them permission or not, it would still protect you as the landowner because that person, you haven't told them no, they've skied across your land. It would protect you, in my view, it would actually give additional protection to unwitting landowners. And it would not in any way, shape, or form give those people permission to be on the lands. It just says that if they happen to choose to use the lands without permission, the landowner is still protected. It actually broadens the landowner protections rather than diminishing them. That was my intent, was to actually try to pick up those unwitting landowners. I know Rep. Seaton has said that his view is actually he's trying to encourage people to allow, and I think that's a very laudable goal. The prohibition language I suggested actually broadens landowners' protections rather than diminishing them. Is the intent of my language?
I got lost a little bit. That is with.
So did I.
Representative Holmes. That is with which language did you mean to do that? Because I've got a direct or indirect with the chairman and Representative Dahlstrom, and I've got explicit and implicit over here, and then I've got the intent of the language with Representative Coghill. I want to find out just.
What did you say,
Representative Grunberg?
What did you say a minute ago? What was your suggested language?
My suggested language was a landowner that does not prohibit a recreational activity. That simply says that anybody who does not prohibit the activity on their land is protected by this in that they won't be held to a negligent standard. If, for instance, a skier skis across my land, I didn't know they were there. I didn't tell them not to come on, but nor did I tell them they could. And they have an accident. I have not prohibited them. I haven't said don't come on my land. So when they come on without my knowledge and they fall, I would be protected by this in that I couldn't be sued for regular negligence on my land. Part of this is I just want to get on the record that that the intent of that suggested language, if we go with the suggested language of a prohibition, somebody who does not prohibit on the land, the intent is not to give people rights to go on other people's land without permission.
Did that clarify? Yes. I find as the chair that I'm less comfortable with that because I'm trying to incorporate a negative into the bill, so as a lay person, it's more difficult for me to understand a negative. And I also find for myself that the words implicit and explicit, although I do understand their meaning, I just don't find them superior to the language as drafted by Ledge Legal that says directly or indirectly. To me, is of the three suggestions that are on the table, I find that the language that's presently in the bill as drafted is clearest to me as a lay person. Representative Grunberg?
I think the part of the problem, Mr. Chair, is that it's almost like looking at a chessboard in a three dimension. If you're prohibited, then you're a trespasser. That's the definition of trespass, somebody who's prohibited from walking on your land. And if you're prohibited, although the bill drafter didn't do any research on the subject, you're generally not given a lot of rights. So the only people who are given rights are people who are not trespassers.
You'll have to excuse me. I'll be back shortly.
just as I was getting to the good part of the leaves.
I felt it, Representative, but I really did.
You feel the warmth as you leave. Okay, so for those of you who are still with us, if you're not a trespasser, then you can sue. The question is, what is the standard of negligence that you have to show? I don't know anybody, nobody has given me an example of anybody who would be able to sue with a simple negligence standard. You're either barred as a trespasser, or you're held to a gross negligence standard under this bill. Those seem to be the only two categories. And what this bill does is it removes the standard of, raises the standard of simple negligence to gross negligence. Those are the two categories. That's the first thing that I see in this bill. It removes the standard of simple negligence.
Representative Seaton, is that how you see it?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. It's a little different because trespass isn't just a sign. Trespass, at least according to Johnson versus State, in order to be to convict a defendant of the offense of criminal trespass, the state is obliged to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he knowingly remained on the premises after personally being ordered to leave and recklessly disregarded a lawful order that he not remain. And so,
different question, Mr.
Well,
Chair.
Anyway, I'm just trying to not insert this bill into saying that it defines criminal trespass, because that's defined in other statutes. And there are, this bill is intended to say, if you allow someone free recreational use of your land, mm-hmm. then this applies. That's what this applies to. I mean, it doesn't go and eliminate negligence for anything other than recreational activity and free recreational activity. So I wanted to make sure that that was clear, that it's not anything other than recreational activity.
We're talking, Madam Chair, that's correct. We're talking about people who fall under the bill who are the recreators, the
right.
people who are doing
right.
recreation. But for the people who are doing recreation, the standard is going to be at least, they have to show at least gross negligence. That's the lowest standard they can prevail. That being said, this legislation will be used as the basis of a jury instruction. It will form the basis of what the judge tells the jury the plaintiff needs to prove to prevail in the case, the standard of care that must be breached. So it should be easily understood using common everyday terms so that judges can standardize their jury instructions and that jurors and lawyers can understand it. And if you start using terms that are not understood, that are unique to this statute, that's going to lead to a lot of confusion. And the term direct or indirect is not a term that, as I'm aware, is used anywhere in the field of tort law. It's only used in terms of the contempt law. A direct contempt is something that's committed in the presence of the court. An indirect contempt is something that's committed outside the presence of the court.
Let's go off the record for just a minute. Thank you.
Okay. So it's got...
Representative Groberg.
Thank you, Minister. It's got to be clear and easily understood. That is what I'm trying to accomplish, regardless of the exact term we use.
Right.
And your language, Representative Holmes, again, was what?
if I may.
Yes.
thank you, Madam Chair. mine was a landowner that does not prohibit. Now, and I do admit that that language does broaden the statute beyond what Representative Seaton's, and my offering of that was just to mostly to ask whether Representative Seaton right. was comfortable. It's not clear he does. He is comfortable with broadening.
So the term allow is a good term. What you, if I may through the chair, wanted to accomplish was that a person can allow something in a way that would be not just saying, yes, you can go on my land, but if it's by not raising an objection or something, and it's just finding the right term that is clear that says that. That's what we have to do. Right.
Thank you. Madam Representative Cockhill.
Madam Chair, welcome to the Judiciary Committee, Mr. Seaton. I think probably two things should happen here, and I'm going to make a suggestion to the chairman. We probably should get the drafter, alleged legal drafter, to come for us, and we should probably also get law to tell us if there is any other use of the term of this, because most of our statutes drafted are drafted in the negative. And so this is a little bit of a breach of that. So we want to find out what we're actually trying to do here. In fact, I think constitutionally it's set up to be drafted in the negative because government generally is not about allowing things but actually drawing lines of prohibition. So I think the Representative Holmes makes a good point there. And so I think we need to talk to the drafter about the carve out here. And if it's a legitimate one, I'm game with you. But for example, you state in the language what allow and indirectly allow is. However, the next thing you say is you don't owe a duty to do maintain the land, you don't owe a duty to warn, you don't have a duty to curtail or prevent activities, or implicitly ensure the land is safe, you don't assume responsibility for injury, etc. So you see the negative is the way you're describing it here, except for in the actual enabling paragraph. So I think we need to talk to the drafter about that style. So not that I want to put you off one more judiciary hearing, but I think before we start wandering off into how we have a positive statement in a negative manner, we want to take a look at that. So just for what it's worth, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Representative Cockhill. Representative Seaton, acting as chair at the moment, I have two choices, and that's either to call or vote or to ask you to come back on Monday with the drafter, and I will request that you be first on the agenda Monday, and I think that would probably be the most productive, positive way to handle it. Is that acceptable to you?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's fine. The just so the committee knows, we had looked at dropping directly or indirectly, because allows is used throughout this in several places in the statutes. However, the instruction under that case would really raise a question of whether you have to directly allow, meaning right. you have to give this verbal permission, and going through with that definition of trying to define allows other than by a judge in a case by case, and that's why this language is left in there.
Right.
If but we will get the drafter to come over. And are there any other questions that we can?
Well, how about if let's do this. If anyone else on the committee has additional questions that they would like, that they know right now they would like the drafter to address, if they could get them in writing to Chairman Ramirez and also to Representative Seaton so that they can be well thought out. Representative Gruber, briefly.
I think a way of handling this, regardless of whatever term you use up here in line 9, would be to have a definition or something farther down in the bill that explains that term.
Why don't you discuss that, Representative Seaton, with the drafter, and we'll go from there. So again, anyone that has questions right now, get them to the chair, Representative Seaton, and you're first up on Monday. And thank you so much for your patience with us. Thank you. All righty, so we will put away House Bill number 25, and the next bill that we have up for reconsideration is House Bill 7.
Would you hope, Madam Chair, will be more simple?
Madam Chair hopes so also. Representative Lynn?
So if you lose a quorum, you got a hint, right?
No. Oh, yeah, we're just going
to... Point well taken. All right. Representative Lynn, would you like to start
Madam
off?
Chair, I'm going to ask my staffer, Dirk Moffert, to continue. He has here a conceptual amendment that we drafted, and I'd like to thank Representative Grunberg because he and my staffer looked at this, and this is what they came up with to answer one of the questions we had at the previous hearing on this bill. Hopefully, this will resolve that issue. So, with that, Madam Chair, please
thank
proceed.
Thank you. If you'd please identify yourself for the record, proceed.
For record, my name is Dirk Moffitt, staff to Representative Bob Lynn. The conceptual amendment you have before you was not put together by a lawyer. It's pretty much me and some help from Deneen Tuck, who's staff to Representative Max Grunberg. I wanted to answer Representative Samuel's question. How do we make this a crime where someone just makes one false caller identification compared to somebody who makes thousands without individually charging them for a Class B misdemeanor for each offense? And what I came up with is the number 5. If you exceed the number 5, it goes from a Class B to a Class A misdemeanor. And I put in some sort of definitions from a layman's point of view. Basically, whether that one set of false caller identification is inserted into a separate or multiple recipients' caller ID systems, or multiple sets of different false caller information is inserted into multiple recipients and or a single recipient's caller ID system. So in essence, if somebody inserts Representative Max Grunberg's information into a caller ID system that automatically calls thousands of people, each display will count as offense. If they set it up so they do individual or unique, same thing. 5 displays, you're now into Class A territory. And I also was talking about basically each display on the caller ID system screen that gets to the end user will be considered a separate act, regardless of whether that be one set of false caller information or a multiple unique set of false caller information. So if I call you 5 times with 5 separate false identifications, or if I call you 5 times using Max Grunberg's caller ID, that does it. If I call over 5 people individually or any combination thereof, 5 over 5, that's you've now you're into Class A misdemeanor if you do that.
Okay. Representative Coghill.
Just for the benefit of those who are from my district, I would like for you to tell us on record and for the listening people the difference between a Class A and a Class B misdemeanor.
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, a Class A misdemeanor is up to 1 year in prison. A Class B misdemeanor is 3 months.
I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't a lesser charge.
Greater charge.
May I ask a parliamentary
Representative Grunberg.
Inquiry? Do we have some other introductions that need to be made?
You know what? I'm going to rule as a chair that we don't for the limit of time, except to tell you close-up students that we welcome you all. We're very pleased that you're here, and we hope that in maybe 10, 15 years you're sitting in these seats and doing the same thing we're doing. So thank you. And
well, not Madam Chair, if I'm running again.
To the chaperones, thank you for your patience in bringing them. Thank you. Okay. So this, if we adopt this, this would be amendment number 5. Have people had a chance to look at it? I wish Representative Samuels was here. Do we know if he's going to be here at all? Okay. Do you know if he was able to look at this amendment? Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Coghill.
though they did a very good job of outlining it, it's still a conceptual amendment.
Correct.
Because,
yes.
I don't think we're going to be able, and what I would do is if we choose to adopt this amendment, I would ask that we don't move the bill out of committee, but that we look at it in CS and get a chance to look at it in context.
See the exact language.
Exactly. So with that, I would probably not argue with the amendment as long as we have one more bite at the apple.
Alrighty.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I have no problem with that. I think it'd be a good idea.
All right. So, Representative Lynn, would you recommend that we hold the bill and continue to?
I think it'd be good as long as we don't get into implicit or explicit.
Okay. I also know that Ms. Carpinetti was here testify, but she had to leave.
Yes.
I think she may be right.
Well, she told me she had a 2 o'clock meeting. So what we are going to do
is... Chair?
Yes.
I did talk to Annie Carpinetti before she left, and there was a change she wanted to make to the bill.
Here comes Ms. Carpinetti. Would you like to come and testify?
We would
love it. If you could help clarify, please identify your name and affiliation for the record and also for the benefit of our close-up students.
My name is Annie Carpinetti, and I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. And I had a couple things. Hello. I wanted to mention to you, and this was just, I listened to the tape from yesterday's hearing, and I know that you inserted the terms intent to defraud or cause harm. And I'm concerned with that. I think intent to defraud is fine. That's defined in Title 11, and we can cross-reference that definition. Cause harm is not clear to me. I know it. I was told that it's used in the federal law, but it's not a term that we use in our criminal law. And we would either have to define it or take it out. I would recommend taking it out because intent to defraud, as it's defined in 1146-990, is a broad definition, and it would probably cover the instances that you're concerned with.
Okay.
And I just also had a suggestion for the penalty. I don't know whether you're interested.
May I inquire before she moves on?
Representative Grobeck.
It is defined in what section?
1146-990.
I think then we need to reference that section, don't
yes.
we?
Yes, and just like you do in the bill already, you say, oh, I don't, where's my bill? Do you have a bill?
No, I haven't.
Okay, sorry. On page 2, line 5, you say knowingly has the meaning given in 1181-900. You should just add intent to defraud has the meaning given in AS 1146-990. So we have that definition that we're used to using and applying. And just in response to Representative Samuel's concern about the penalty, our suggestion is that you say something like in paragraph C of the bill, say violation of A of this section is a Class B misdemeanor if the information is forwarded to less than 25 telephones, and it's a Class A misdemeanor if the information is forwarded to 25 or more telephones. Just a suggestion. The number is obviously something that you can choose.
Alrighty. And Ms. Carpinetti, could you tell me what line you would recommend that definition of 1146-990 be inserted?
Well, it would be after line 5 on page 2.
Line 5, okay, just so that would just renumber, okay.
And then it would mean that on line 4 of page 1, you would say a person may not, with intent to defraud, insert false information into a caller ID.
All right. System. That seems very common sense. Is there anyone that has problems with that as a conceptual amendment?
Madam Chair.
Senator Grunberg. Okay.
So this will be incorporated in the new CS then?
Yes.
Yes.
Just adding that definition.
The term is intent to defraud.
Yes.
Okay. And then, okay, I don't have any, no objection.
Okay, so that is conceptual amendment number 5.
No, that'd be number 6.
No, we did not.
We label this.
Oh, I apologize. That would be number 6. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Grunberg.
So we are then going to have to, since we already took up as amendment number 3, or cause harm, so we need another amendment deleting the phrase or cause harm. If we're going to, but I would like to discuss that for a minute, if I may. somebody like with Congressman Murphy, I'm
can
not...
You may tell us who that is.
He's a congressman from Pennsylvania who was the victim of spoofing, as I recall. But he's not important. The important thing is, and I'm kind of asking through the chair, Ms. Carpinetti, spoofing is basically using somebody else's name or phone number to give the person who's called a misimpression of who it was that called. And they could do it for a variety of reasons, only one of which is to defraud somebody. But somebody could use it if they were a kind of a stalker or a harasser or something like that in a domestic violence kind of a situation, or could use it in a coercive or an intimidating way to coerce, in the legal sense, threaten somebody by saying, I'm your boss, and if you don't do this, you're going to lose your job or something. So I think that's going to really narrow the bill's scope if we limit it to intents to defraud.
Through the chair, if I could respond to that.
Please do.
1146.990 defines intent to defraud to mean an intent to injure someone's interest which has value or an intent to use deception. So you could have a stalker who is calling and inserting false information, trying to telephone his or her victim, and you would be inserting it with the intent to use deception to get that victim to answer the phone. So I think this is a pretty broad definition of intent to defraud, which is why...
I would just ask, if I may, through the chair...
Senator Kronberg?
That, that would seem to be... correct. Since we're going to have a few days, the bill drafter, I'm looking at Mr. Moffitt here. If I want to be sure that there isn't any kind of a case that would fall between the cracks, and we have a few days here, I certainly have no objection. I'll offer the amendment. With the understanding that if you think of something that's going to fall between the cracks, we'll try to cure it on Monday. You follow me?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Kronberg.
Then I will move as amendment number 7.
How about a suggestion first, if that's acceptable to you? I know that Representative Samuels is very interested in this bill and has been attending to other state business, so he hasn't had a chance to hear what's just happened, and he needs to be brought up to speed. I know that the chair is very interested in these changes, and I also know that you, the three of you that are working together, need to work with the drafter. And the chair has also requested that amendments be given to him, especially more lengthy ones, before the committee. Could I ask the three of you to please work together? This will be the second bill that will be heard on Tuesday. And so, for the record, amendment number 5 was not moved or adopted. Amendment number 6, the conceptual amendment on page 2, following line 5, number 4, we added a number 5, which is a definition, Representative Samuels, of 1146.990, intent to defraud. There was no objection to that.
So that's correct, Madam Chair, and I think
that was a conceptual amendment that was.
Amendment 6 adopted then?
Yes. Yes. So, with that in mind, Representative Lynn?
This we had here, number 5, that was the 5-year suggestion from Ms. Carbonetti. We might want to change that to the 25. I liked what she said.
Well,
am I correct?
Thank you, Representative Lynn. What I would ask is that you incorporate that into the CS that you.
Right.
On the amendment that you are working on,
25,
and at that point you may wish to withdraw then.
Right.
This amendment, Representative Gruenberg.
I'd like through the chair to ask Ms. Carpinetti, from a prosecutor's point of view or law enforcement, for a Class A misdemeanor to get a Class A from a Class B, you're going to have to prove 25 different events. That's going to be virtually not cost effective, too many. It's going to be very difficult to it's like prosecuting 25 different crimes, essentially, to get a Class A misdemeanor. I think that maybe just make it impossible to prosecute, wouldn't it?
Through the chair, I think there's, just for your information, I personally have never prosecuted this type of case, but I know there are phone records that you can get that make it a little bit easier to prosecute rather than getting, you know, 25 individuals in to testify. If you have one piece of information like you were suggesting yesterday that reached 1,000 phones, I don't know that it would be that difficult to get the records to prove that.
I would just, through the chair, I would suggest that maybe the bill sponsor at work with you to see what is a good number. I don't want to put something on the books that's tough to prosecute.
Sure.
Thank
well,
you.
And I think that the number you choose is certainly your decision to make.
Right. So, Representative Lynn, if you could do a little research on actually how easy it is to access those records, and so we can come up with a number that that is reasonable and yet prosecutes the a wrong that is being done, if so. Are there any further questions or anything? I think we're all leaving here with some assignments.
I think we're all on the right track.
We're on the right. Okay, with that, it's 2:00 and judiciary is adjourned. Thank you.